Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to Amy and TJ. We are, at least I am, coming in hot today.
Literally.
Actually, coming in hot. Were you embarrassed to be next to me on the way in to work today?
Sir, I am never embarrassed to be next to you under any circumstance, ever.
What's the temperature outside?
40, was it 46? 40-something? Something like
all right.
That today.
Yeah, so normally you would wear a jacket, but...
No, this is coat weather.
Okay, it's coat weather, yeah. For sure, right? Yes. So by the time I made it to the subway, I had to strip down to my tank top and then walked out of the subway and felt amazing with a tank top on.
You know, if I was listening to this and I heard Amy Robach say she stripped down in public to her tank top, the visual I have is different from what I actually saw when I was on the train with you.
It wasn't sexy.
You still had pants and other things on.
Right, right. But I was sweating profusely.
Yes.
And this is a problem I think a lot of women of a certain age can understand. But I've been dealing with this since I was 40 when I was put into a medically induced menopause. That was something that happened from my breast cancer diagnosis. And it's one of those things that just lives on. Like it's just, it feels like it's never going away. So for 10 years, hot flashes have really ruled my life. And this morning, or at least today, that was an extra special fun commute.
Extra special fun. Yes. right, Andy.
I knew people were staring at me. It was embarrassing.
But this happens every day, several times a day.
It does.
Now, and I know when it's going to, I can tell when it's happening. It's fun for me now. It's a game because you start ripping off like blankets and whatnot in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And all I do is reach over. And I just take my finger and just give it a little slide up your back and soaking wet.
Soaking
back
wet.
Is soaking wet.
I'm not being dramatic.
No. I'm not being dramatic. This is a real thing. I go through sheets like every 3 weeks.
It is. It's a dramatic event for me multiple times a day. And it's just when it happens in public, it's so embarrassing. It's happened on planes. And today, I think for one of the first times it happened on the subway. I say all of this to bring up because this is part of the theme of today's podcast. We are in the month of January. A lot of people are focusing on their health. And I really wanted to take the time today to remind women that this is a month. This is a reminder as we reset and we focus on improving ourselves to make that appointment for your mammogram. I think a lot of people out there know that I'm a breast cancer survivor, and I am only a survivor and a thriver because I was pushed into a mammovan for a work assignment back in 2013, and I thought I was the picture of health, and turns out I had stage 2 invasive breast cancer. It had already spread to my lymph nodes, and curiously enough, at the time, the recommendation was that women who had no family history could wait until they're 50. So I had no intention of going at any point before I was 50. It was only because of a work assignment that I went ahead and did it at 40 to kind of show other women, hey, it's not that bad. It's not that horrible of a test, and it can save your life. Well, it wound up doing just that for me. And I have been preaching mammograms. They're not perfect, but they're the best test we have. And so I just want to encourage any woman out there who's dragging their feet, who is at any age, honestly, whenever you feel it's necessary, because, and we'll talk about this, and I've said this so many times, this focus on family history is ridiculous. Only 15% of breast cancer patients have family history with breast cancer. So 85% of us who are survivors or who have been diagnosed have zero family history. So that shouldn't even be a part of your equation as to whether or not you should get a mammogram or when you should get a mammogram. And it's changed.
I know what you're saying. It is a part of the equation, or should be, if you do have a family history.
Correct. Absolutely. You should have twice the chance of having or developing breast cancer.
And you should get in there and be on it no matter kind of what age. You got to be diligent. But to your point, and I've had this conversation with you when we've done shows before and we've been in commercial breaks or somewhere in the office, that I was blown away. Like, wait a minute, I thought it was all about family history. And you explained that it was not, and the numbers are so low. Don't get me wrong, it's still important to talk about, but it seems like a lot of women do think, hey, I don't have a family history, I'm good until 40, 45, 50.
That was me, and I was definitely to 50. So it's a reminder. And in fact, if you all have been following the news, I'm sure you have, in the last few weeks, we've seen two women who are in the public eye who have come forward to announce that they too have breast cancer. Nicole Eggert, you may remember her from Baywatch, Charles in Charge. She is now, she was just diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer, and she found it through a self-exam. And then, wow, what an impassioned speech CNN anchor Sarah Seidner gave this week. Just a powerful on-air announcement and reminder about taking initiative and taking control of your own health. She was just diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. She's in treatment right now, and she reminded all of us. And this is staggering. Stage 3 now is absolutely curable. But if you're a Black woman or a woman of color in this country, you are 40% more likely to die from breast cancer. That is appalling.
It's appalling. And you start to read up on this stuff, and it really pisses you off that that Black women, once again, are bearing the brunt of something in this country at a disproportionate number. So Black women, and again, we talk about women, of course, overwhelmingly breast cancer affects women. But every man that can hear our voice right now is impacted by breast cancer, because all of us got a mama, got aunts, got sisters, got cousins, got friends, got somebody is impacted. But Black women, if you're listening to our voices, and if anybody out there has a Black woman in their life that you care about, you need to be talking to them about this, because it was staggering to me that under the age of 40, the numbers for Black women, your chances of dying, if you're a Black woman right now under the age of 40, you get diagnosed with breast cancer, and you have a friend, a white woman who's under 40, diagnosed with breast cancer, both of you under 40 diagnosed with breast cancer, your chances of dying almost double hers chances of dying from it. And this is something we can do about it. Look, there's so many socioeconomic reasons for this, and you go back to just systemic racism in this country that has led to a position to where Black folks, Black women, have less access to health care. They are in places and neighborhoods that oftentimes they don't have the best environmental factors. You also have the issue where you talk about poverty, you're not eating the best, which also has an impact. We're disproportionately impacted by weight gain, obesity. All of those things have an impact. But I am blown away that the chances of a Black woman getting breast cancer are still less than a white woman's.
But they die more regularly.
If you get it, you have a much greater chance of dying. And that's just that we got to keep beating that drum. And I'm glad Sarah Seidner, who somebody I worked with when I was at CNN, she's been there a long time and is as good as they come. And I'm glad this has come to the forefront.
Yeah, and if you can, anybody, Google her and Google her speech that she gave on air. It is incredible, and it is powerful, and hopefully it will save lives. It will inspire people who haven't or don't want to or have had a hard time finding a way to get a mammogram to push and to advocate. Unfortunately, as women, a lot of times we do have to advocate for ourselves, and so that is part of the equation. Also of note, you know, I know, and I've preached early detection. I have preached prevention, because the sooner you find your breast cancer, the better chance you have of surviving it, period. But it's important to note, anyone, whatever stage you are, 0 to 3, that's an early stage breast cancer. 30% of those of us who had an early stage breast cancer will go on to develop stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. And a lot of people out there might not know the difference and the distinction. I certainly didn't before I was diagnosed. But this is the best way to describe it. While amazing drugs and treatments and therapies have come about in the last 5 to 10 years, we can extend the lives and create a better standard of living for women living with stage 4 breast cancer. But right now, it remains incurable and it is ultimately terminal. And people don't like to talk about it because it's sad and it's scary. But if we don't talk about it, we can't get the funding we need, because there is a cure for breast cancer. It's called cash. And that creates research, which will eventually create a cure. And I know that every scientist I've talked to believes it is imminent. It will happen in our lifetime. But for people who are fighting for their life, it can't come soon enough. And one of those people is one of my best friends. Her name is Morgan Mitchell. She is a force. I met her 5 years ago, April 3rd, 2019, to be specific. We were at a cancer gala sponsored by Five Under 40. You mentioned women under 40. I was diagnosed at 40, but I'd had my cancer for a couple years, according to doctors. So I absolutely got breast cancer in my 30s. Morgan found her breast cancer at the age of 28. And that is happening more and more. Younger women are being diagnosed with metastatic stage 4 breast cancer. And doctors don't know why, but it's happening at a much higher rate than it has in the past. And get this, Morgan found her lump on the day she got engaged to her now amazing husband, Bob, who we love and adore. But what an unbelievable date. You know, you always remember the day you got engaged. But she found her lump, and then a few days, weeks later, she ended up getting the diagnosis that she couldn't have imagined, that it wasn't just breast cancer, it was stage 4 metastatic breast cancer that had already spread to her liver. And so now she found herself planning treatment and surgeries at the same time she was planning a wedding. Well, guess what? 6 years later, Morgan is in studio with us to talk about her journey, and to inspire you, A, to be an advocate for your own health, but B, to live better, to live differently, and to live with purpose. So, Morgan, welcome to the iHeart Studios. Woohoo!
Amy, TJ, thank you guys so much.
Okay, this isn't fair, all right? Because people can't see your face. Okay, because what she just said, metastatic, and people don't want to talk about it because it's sad. Morgan, I've known you for I don't know how many years now. And the one thing that's never come across my mind when I'm around you is the word sad or a feeling of sad. I know when I first, that run we took.
Williamsburg Bridge. That was a doozy.
That was a doozy. That run we took. I messaged her afterwards, like, who the hell is this lady? Because you are, but you hear metastatic and you want to, you think like, oh my goodness, what? But you are a joy with every room you walk into. And there ain't nothing I've ever seen sad about you. Nothing.
Thank you, TJ. I try to live that way for sure. But, you know, the ups and downs, it's a roller coaster of emotions. But you got to look at the glass half full, because looking at it the other way, it's just too damn sad.
Were you always like that?
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah.
I mean, a 3-time marathoner before this, you climb mountains, you hike, you're so energetic and athletic and had so many plans and still do. But they all got disrupted and interrupted and changed because of this diagnosis. I will say you are a badass director of business at a major media company, and you are wheeling and dealing. I have been with you when you are getting a chemo treatment and you are closing like, what, a $70 million deal on the phone? I mean, I think we have a picture of it. It was remarkable.
Thank you, Amy.
Yeah. I know sometimes you say, I don't have a choice but to do that, but you do. You could curl up in fetal position and say, why me? Do you do that? Have you had those moments? How do you keep living your life and at the same time dealing with this diagnosis that I'm sure you never forget any moment of any day?
Yeah, it's crazy to wake up. Hot flashes are a great reminder. Like, oh, shit, I have cancer.
How many do you get a day?
It depends on the day, to be honest.
Today? Exactly. How many today?
Probably once or twice.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. But it's for real. The shedding is for real. But you had asked about, do I ever, you know, crawl up in a fetal position? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. but I am surrounded by amazing people who lift me up, like yourself, like family and friends, an amazing husband. And I think really finding the joy in life is how we've been able to just put one foot in front of the other and go. I also think a lot more rolls off my back. Pre-cancer, I was stressed out about work, stressed out about everything, you know, very type A, cared way too much about what everybody thought. And you get this diagnosis and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, I'm the only one that can, you know, make this really better and make my life the way that I want to. And while 6 years later, I can be grateful for the diagnosis, which probably to some of you will seem insane. Thank you, therapy.
Are you grateful?
I am, yeah.
For the cancer?
I am grateful for the diagnosis and the experience, but I think that it's allowed me to meet a lot of amazing women and really impact my life in such a positive way. Don't get me wrong, there are days when I just wish I didn't have it and life could be so much easier, and the what ifs. And the what ifs really bring you down. And those are the hard questions to quiet the nerves, quiet the voices inside of your head, and work with a therapist or speak to your husband about it. You know, having lots of conversations with Bob about, like, what do we want to do? What do we want to get out of the next 5 years? What do they look like for us? I didn't want kids until I met Bob. And I knew that my life, once I found out about breast cancer, was going to be forever impacted. And I think that, Amy, has been the hardest challenge of them all, is kind of dealing with your whole future being kind of thrown up in the air and kind of lit on fire.
You said you guys talked about, like, what do the next 5 years look like?
Yeah.
What did those 5 years look like?
It's a great question. Lots of traveling, huh? Teach. Lots of traveling, lots of taking the girls trips. Bob would tell me to take more girls trips. Mm. And really focusing in on getting out in the mountains and renewing our sense of just exploration. So climbing a lot of mountains, Amy had mentioned. We went to New Zealand on our honeymoon. We got married. We lived life to the fullest. I don't think that our wedding would have been the fairy tale / celebration of life that it was if I wasn't diagnosed and dealing with something so chronic. And I think that was something, Amy, you had mentioned, that stage four is ultimately terminal. And I think the biggest learning for me was when I'd gotten my second opinion and the doctor at the time, the oncologist, said, we like to think about your life as an encyclopedia. Lots of chapters. Some might be short, others might be really long. And so for me, that was a good analogy to really take home and apply, because some treatments I've been on for 9 months, others I've been on for 3 years.
Talk about, I'm curious, because a lot of people want to know, what is treatment like for you when you're metastatic? Where are you in your treatments, and what are they like? How often are they? Just give us a sense of what it's like as a patient.
So from diagnosis to now, I have been on a 3-week regimen of infusions. They have varied from immunotherapies, which are great. You don't lose your hair. I say great. They're not fun. You get hot flashes. You get a lot of really not fun GI symptoms, let's be honest. And it's been frustrating. So with each treatment and each kind of new drug that I've tried, the side effects are different. So it's all about symptom management. But right now I am on a drug that's a drug conjugate, which basically means chemo plus that immunotherapy that I'd spoke about. And it's hard. It's challenging. I'm down for the count for about a week. A lot of my girlfriends would say, you're down for the count is like somebody's average day. So I'm thankful for that. I have probably had an abundance of energy. I always have been a ball of energy. I think that's, Amy, why you and I are just like of kin, if you will. And it's just really stinks, I guess, the week after treatment, because you're really kind of nauseous. Your head could be in the porcelain bowl and you just like, did I go out and have a 3-day binge, or how am I feeling right now?
Right. But you're still going to work. You're not missing days of work. And you know what I think of when I think of Morgan? She likes to type this to me or text this to me. LFG. Let's fucking go.
Yeah.
That is you. And every time I hear that or see that, I think of Morgan. Like, that is, I feel like, your mantra, LFG. Yeah. Even when you're going into treatment, even when you know you're going to have a bad day, let's do this. Let's get this done. But this is, you've explained this to me, the last treatment available to you right now. Explain that.
Yeah. So it's been 6 years since I was diagnosed. In those 6 years, this drug, it's called Enhertu. AstraZeneca came out with it. I want to say now it's been 2 years. It'll be 2 years in the summer that they released this drug. And it was not available 6 years ago. And now I'm on it. And you're constantly checking in with your doctors on how does your blood work look? How are your PET scans looking? And if this stops working, I don't have like another option of a new drug to try that could potentially continue to save my life. We would have to recycle and go back to a different chapter that I may have already tried. And for me, psychologically, to go back to something that didn't work, I brain can't compute that. Mm. You know, it's hard to compartmentalize when you know that something didn't work and there's a potential to have to go back to that.
But right now, it is working.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. And you have something very big happening tomorrow. We're going to talk about that after the break, because it's something that you've fought for that isn't necessarily something that doctors advocate for or even support in some cases. The choice you've made, something you're doing tomorrow, and we're going to talk about that when we come back.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Amy and TJ. We have one of my favorite people with us here today, Morgan Mitchell. She is a warrior. She's a survivor. She's a thriver. She is living with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. And I teased something she's going to do tomorrow. But actually, I wanted to, before we get to that, go back a bit, because you got emotional, not about yourself, but when TJ was talking about Black women and how they suffer disproportionately to women of any other color. You got emotional. You actually have a personal connection to this and story to this. And it starts with 5 Under 40, the organization in which we met.
Yeah. You meet so many powerful women throughout a breast cancer journey. And I think for me, being in a room with young professionals that are, you know, insane. I mean, this amazing African-American woman, she is a doctor and she also has stage 4. And I met her at 540. And I remember her saying that my own hospital didn't take me seriously. And it stuck with me. How could somebody's own hospital, that they're a doctor, not take her seriously or say, oh, you'll be fine. You'll be back in 2 weeks. Here's your drug regimen. You've got this. And the fact that it's probably because she was Black drives me insane, and it's not fair. And I know that I had an angel in this, a girlfriend who was working for the breast surgeon that I was initially diagnosed by. And if you don't have somebody like that telling you what to do, the questions to ask, helping you, pushing you through it, it can be a really dark, scary journey, even in the medical world. And I honestly get sick to my stomach because it's not fair. And it's not right. And so, yeah, I got super emotional about it because I couldn't imagine not having the army behind me to get me to where I am now. And that's why I'm strong.
And that leads to the numbers, right? Well, it's disproportional. You all talk all the time about you have to be your own advocate. I know you have been your own advocate. You had to do the same walking in there. And for Black women, oftentimes, who do not have the backing and the voice and they're being believed, but it's wild that the number one cancer for deaths in this country, the leading cause of cancer deaths is lung cancer for white men. The leading cause of cancer deaths for white women, lung cancer. The leading death from cancer for Black men is lung cancer. The leading cause of cancer death among Black women is breast cancer. The only group in there that lung cancer isn't leading the way. So where does the, for you all, and you were just talking about this, where does the difficulty in the advocacy come from in being able to, I tell her all the time, she has whatever issue and then she still starts Googling. I was, Jesus, please don't go Google, because you're going to have all kinds of new issues.
When you have a cancer diagnosis, even if you've survived it and you're in technical remission, any little hiccup is a massive wave of fear that it's come back.
But if you have a scratch on the back of your hand, you still go.
And Google, like, oh, what does this mean?
WebMD, how to treat.
But you go and you do all the research and then you go ask the question, you advocate for yourself. What were the challenges you had in getting someone to first believe you, listen to you, and then take a course of action that you wanted?
Yeah. Great question. Again, I had mentioned that I had an angel of a girlfriend who worked for a breast surgeon. She was my first call. I mean, Bob and I are laying in Yosemite. He's going to propose. You guys had mentioned that. And I like feel a walnut sized lump in my breast. And I'm like, WTF? So we woke up on East Coast time and I called my girlfriend immediately and had like full on panic attack with her. She goes, 80% are benign. And I was like, okay, but this doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel like dense breast tissue, which is what I had had. And having her kind of help me get through the stages and seeing her passion, because her mother also was a breast cancer survivor and is a breast cancer survivor, that really helped me kind of show me the ropes of, you know, this is your health. You are the one that has to go home at the end of the day, not them. And you have to live with yourself. And so we've kind of always lived by that mantra of what feels right for you.
Yeah.
And Amy teased this a little bit, but tomorrow I'm having a mastectomy of my left breast and I've already had my right breast removed. This is very not on protocol for metastatic breast cancer.
It's controversial.
Yeah, it is.
Why?
Because typically they don't like to remove the host and put you through that trauma of surgery. So like Amy had mentioned, you know, some old school thoughts would be that it's terminal, so why put you through that from a quality of life standpoint? And so we're treating you systemically, you know, from your brain all the way to your toes with the medicine that you're on. So why go through that? Because essentially those meds should shrink everything and keep you alive.
So why do you want to go through it? I mean, you know you have tumors in your liver, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And why then would you want to remove your breast? I mean, it's obviously a very traumatic surgery, which you already know. Mm-hmm. So why do that?
Ames, I'm going to be 35 in a few weeks. Like, I need to have my situation situated. I got to feel good about myself. And so a lot of it is all mental. You know, I had a reoccurrence, or not a reoccurrence because I have always had breast cancer, but I had more tumors pop up in my right breast during COVID. And during COVID, you know, they would only do surgery that was required. And so we really pushed to get the double mastectomy at the time. And doctors did not recommend that at the time for me, given my situation, given the blood work, given my treatment regimen, which is still every 3 weeks, my butt is in that infusion chair. So I had to get back to my systemic therapy and get back on the meds. So luckily, and HER2 has been working, and it's been working for 2 years. And I think you were with me at the treatment where I was just asking a lot of questions, really pushing. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not happy.
A lot of pushback, want to just say, from the doctors. I was impressed and amazed at your tenacity and you coming back at a doctor. A lot of women don't have that chutzpah. Like, they don't feel like they can push back from what a doctor's telling you, because the doctor's told you no.
Yeah. And I've been fortunate enough to have such a good relationship with my care team where they're willing to hear you out. And I do think with metastatic, a lot of it is quality of life. And I'm going to try not to get emotional, but it's like, I just got married. You know, Bob and I are like wanting to have this fruitful life. And every time I hop in the shower, I feel like fucking Frankenstein.
Yep.
And you're constantly reminded. So I didn't need to continue to feel that way for the next, I don't know, 5, 10, 20 years that I'm alive. Like, I want to make sure that I look and feel as much like a woman, even though I'm going through crazy treatment right now. I lost my hair with HER2. That was really hard.
You have an amazing wig, by
Thank
the way.
You. Thank
I mean,
you.
Amazing.
It's those Orthodox women in Brooklyn know what's up. Thank you. You know, everybody has something that they go through in their life. And I think just advocating for what you want. Mm. You came with me to that treatment, Amy. The next treatment, 3 weeks later, I brought in Bob and I said, baby, I need you. He goes, what do you need? I said, I need you to have my back and I need you to tell them how depressed I have been. Because behind closed doors, like, it's been tough. You know, it's not all rainbows and butterflies. And this is the raw, real stuff where you're like, I just want to feel normal.
Yeah. And I think, you know what? People discount the fact, it sounds superficial and silly to say you care about your hair or you care about how your breasts look. Mm. That is so important, because when you have breast cancer, so much of what makes you a woman is taken away from you. Your ability to have children, oftentimes, if you have a hormone positive cancer like you do and I did, your breasts. And even though, yes, you're going to get a mastectomy and you're going to get reconstructive surgery, which is an amazing thing, you know how they feel. I know how they feel every time you're in a shower. It's so funny you mentioned that, because that is when I'm so aware of what I've been through, because you have no feeling. And it's a strange, it's like two rocks or boulders are like just kind of put on you. And it's just like, you know, the Novocaine you feel in a when you have your teeth and you're going to the dentist, and that's always there on your chest. But if you don't look the way you want to look and you don't feel the way you want to feel, it's hard to be in it, to win it in a way. Like, the mental part of it is such an important part of the physical healing as well. And I think that's discounted often.
But is there a disagreement between patient and doctor sometime about what quality of life actually means? You mentioned that, but they might think your quality of life, it should be not having the surgery. And you think, like, how do you bridge that gap? And I assume the doctor, you can't just tell a doctor,
no,
this is what you're going to do. Do you have to kind of shop around and keep getting second, third, and fourth, and fifth, and sixth opinions? How does that work when there's a disagreement about what quality of life looks like for you?
Yeah, I think what was on my side was 2 years of asking for this and really pushing for it. I love my oncologist, but you're absolutely right. And so she actually helped me find the breast surgeon that I went and saw. And the breast surgeon has done a lot of research on women under the age of 50 with oligometastatic. That word means in one place. So I have multiple tumors on my liver that are breast cancer positive, but it's in one place. And so the research that my doctor had done basically just proved that essentially the quality of life and prolonged life was not impacted, but potentially helped the women under the age of 50 live longer. Yeah. And it was a controversial report because they said, well, you researched women that are healthier. I'm giving everybody big air quotes here, healthier. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm thankful that I had worked out kind of a multi-step plan with that breast surgeon. And we're thankful that I even can do this because I know mentally it's just going to make me feel that much better. Like talking about the wig, I remember going in the next day to work feeling so confident. So confident.
It's a game changer.
Yeah.
Like, and it should not be discounted, and you shouldn't be embarrassed to say, I need this. This matters. This helps. This has a huge impact on my well-being. And it's important for us to be able to say that and not be embarrassed about it. Like that is a part of this treatment and going through something like this. The other big thing I know that you've been dealing with, and this is something, you know, the average age for women to get breast cancer is 62. And I think a lot of people think of breast cancer as an older woman's disease postmenopausal. But for people who are premenopausal, for women who are, gosh, you were 28, you want to have babies. You wanted to have a family. You had an idea of what your life was going to be. And fertility is such a huge thing, especially when you're a cancer patient. You've had to go through a lot to even have the opportunity to possibly have a child. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when I found out that it was stage four, it was a Friday, December 1st, 2019. My girlfriend had sat me down and was like, next steps is fertility. And we'll get you into appointments the following week for your oncologist, but you need to figure out your fertility clinic now. I called my GP and I was set up immediately at Cornell with a fertility specialist who saw me at 6 a.m. the next morning. And I will never forget that. And she was so kind and pulled me into her office and said, I'm a breast cancer survivor too. We're going to get you through this, kiddo. And she's been my doctor from a fertility standpoint ever since. But my doctor, my oncologist, fought with my fertility doctor back and forth because I had estrogen positive breast cancer. And I remember this where, you know, this then sparked a whole heated discussion in our family where the moms in our family were like, you got to just save you. You can adopt. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. They kind of agreed with my oncologist that said, I'm not saving your future babies. I'm saving you. And like, I'm keeping you alive. And again, just having your people, I'm so grateful for Bob that he said, well, we're kind of great. We're kind of cool, Marks. Like, I want that chance to have a biological child. And Bob is adopted. And so it sparked a lot of really interesting conversation. And we pushed back. And I remember I was on letrozole. I was getting estrogen suppressed, starting the shots. I will never forget being in a bar, basically doing the Menopur, which is all of the hormones that you have to take to go through egg freezing in a bar because my friends decided to throw Bob and I an engagement party.
Nice.
And just being down and literally just shooting up, like no big deal. Like I'll never forget that. And, you know, we were able to save 5 eggs. And from those 5 eggs, from a 28-year-old, we have 2 baby girl embryos. And now we're working through the surrogacy process, which also is just mind-boggling and crazy, but really thankful that we're even in a place and situation where we can even afford it.
But the oncologist, I'm going back because this is my ignorance in learning about all this, and I assume a lot of people are as well. But what is the fight between the oncologist and your fertility doctor? What the oncologist thinks you were putting yourself at risk.
Potentially, yes.
By doing so.
Yes.
What is that? See, I don't completely understand how you making a decision about fertility then ends up putting you adversely at risk for something else. What is that?
So typically when you're doing IVF, you wouldn't suppress your estrogen, mm-hmm. TJ. Mm-hmm. So that is basically the big difference, is that my fertility doctor knew that I had estrogen positive breast cancer. So she put me on letrozole. And that was the discussion, right? Of, you're stage four. We're not fucking around here. You need to get on treatment immediately. And I was like, okay, you know, you're deer in the headlights when you first find out this news. And so really that's the argument of stage four, we need to start you on treatment immediately. And this was my, you know, experience, but I am sure that other doctors with other stages would probably push for no fertility too, so that they can immediately hop on your medication and start saving your life.
It's a delay in treatment is correct. The issue.
And
how much of a delay we're talking?
You're adding estrogen into your body.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
But it was that serious too, when you hear stage four, 2 weeks is too long for the oncologist. I don't want to wait a moment.
Right, even though we were suppressing my estrogen. So that's the crazy thing. Right. I mean, at 28, I probably should have popped out like 30 eggs, but because we were suppressing my estrogen, I only got 5. But that's 5 more than I would have had had I not done it.
And at stage 2, by the way, my oncologist told me, granted, I was also 40 and already had children, but she point blank said this to me almost immediately after my diagnosis. You are out of the baby making business. Be glad you had 2 kids, but you're not going to do anything. I mean, they did give me a 2-week window, but she was adamantly opposed, even at stage 2, for me to harvest any eggs. And that's something that people don't think about when you now have younger women getting this disease at advanced stages. It's something that people don't consider, and it's important. Mm-hmm. It's a big part of who we are as women and what we thought our life would look like. And when it's taken away from you, suddenly it becomes something you didn't ever think you had to consider.
Exactly.
What have the emotions been for you?
The emotions, a roller coaster. The surrogacy stuff. Survivor guilt robes. I find myself in weird places. You know, when you are diagnosed with stage four means a lot of different things. I have friends with it in their bones and brain, in their liver, brain, lung, you know, more than just oligometastatic. And so for me, it's tough to see those women go. It's tough to keep fighting. And so it's such an emotional roller coaster that it's been a challenge. And again, friends are huge. Family's huge. My family is always just so positive, which is great. Sometimes I have to be like, okay, fam, I love you, but let me be sad for a second, please. Like, cut out the jokes. Like, this is serious. But
cancer humor works.
It works, Rhodes.
In moments,
it works.
You need it, right?
It absolutely works.
It sounds
works.
Macabre, but it's actually, it's a survival tool.
It's so true. And you have to laugh.
You have to laugh.
You have to laugh.
And you've taught us to laugh and to live differently. We're going to talk more about how you live. And I want you to inspire everyone listening the way you've inspired me. We'll be right back.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Amy and TJ. We have more with the amazing Morgan Mitchell. And Morgan, I wanted to, you know, something that people asked me, even when I had my diagnosis, but I'm sure you get this all the time, stage four, metastatic breast cancer. I know that some people say it's like the way you're treated, it's like almost witnessing your own funeral while you're still alive. And people don't know what to say. They don't know how to act. They don't know what to do. Can you talk a little bit about, just let people know what's a good thing to say and maybe even what's a bad thing to say?
It's okay. You all, we are going to continue with Morgan here in just a second. But crazy as this sounds, she told us when she came in, she was expecting a call from her doctor. She has the surgery we talked about is tomorrow. And she just had to get up to take the call from her doctor, who is going to talk her through and explain what the process and the surgery is going to be tomorrow. It's amazing. We didn't plan this. She said, hey, guys, just heads up. And sure enough, the phone rang while we're here in the middle of this.
Yeah. And she has to go make sure she knows what's happening tomorrow. It's a big surgery. It's an amputation. I mean, it's not a boob job. I think a lot of people think it's just some, oh, you're getting new boobs. Great. Good for you. I wish I had. I mean, no, this is a major surgery. And she has to get everything lined up and she has to know what she's doing tomorrow. So we're going to let her take care of that. In the meantime, I wanted to mention, I was able to talk to, and she's also been in the news lately, Shannon Doherty. She's also stage four metastatic. She was diagnosed with early stage, I believe, in 2015. And in 2017, she found out that, in fact, it had recurred, or there was a recurrence, and it was metastatic. And she said to me, after she was newly diagnosed, that figuring out the mental part of this is the hardest part. And she referred me to, of all things, a Snoopy Charlie Brown cartoon that she says she reads daily to get her through the day, to get her going, to keep her mood and her mind in the right place. And I was like, a Charlie Brown cartoon? But I was going to share it with you all because it's really a beautiful thing, and I encourage you all to look it up. Charlie Brown says, I think Morgan's coming back in, actually. Hey, Morgan, we kept going without you, so come on back, sit
Amazing.
Down, come to the mic.
I just got my instructions for tomorrow.
All right.
6:30 in the morning. Let's f-ing go.
LFG. All right, well, you came right in the middle of, I was talking, you know, you're familiar with Shannon Doherty.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Stage four metastatic, mm-hmm. and she was brave to come out and talk about it and be, you know, basically a model for everyone to look at and watch and see and learn from, because there's so much to learn. But she referred me to this Charlie Brown cartoon that she leans on, that she looks to every morning to get her going when she's not necessarily in the mood to do just that. Charlie Brown says to Snoopy, "We only live once, Snoopy." Kind of like YOLO. Snoopy says to Charlie Brown, "Wrong. We only die once. We live every day." And that is what I see you doing. What do you say to yourself? Who do you turn to? Is it Bob? Is it yourself? When you're feeling like you just don't want to get up, when you're afraid?
It's Bob. It's my closest friends. And, you know, whether it's our safe word, I need a distraction. And my girlfriends just crack me up with crazy stories. And if for Bob, it's, where are we going next, baby? What mountain are we climbing? And Norway's up on our list this summer.
I love that. And you, and when you were interrupted by your doctor. You were going to tell us what people can say, should say, and what they shouldn't say.
Yeah. So please never say, oh, like, you've got this. I had a mom or a, you know, aunt or whatever. Everybody's situation is different. And so I think, yes, it's nice to have common ground, but it's simple. I'm thinking about you. I'm here for you. I know that this is going to be tough, or I don't know what you're going through at all, but I'm here for you. And I want you to know that you're supported, or I'm part of your army. I'm part of your tribe. Please never just blank stares when somebody tells you, because they don't know what to say. I've gotten that. And that probably was the worst, because I think a lot of us with just emotional EQ after we get diagnosed with cancer know that when people screw up and don't say the right thing, it's coming from a place of love. Or the one, if anybody can do this, it's you.
That's not good.
That one's also not so great. Or, okay. You know, God really just is going to be by your side. And if anybody can fight this, you know, he'll be there for you. Because you don't know what religious spectrum people are on. Let me tell you what, I've been roller coasting around of like my beliefs with a cancer diagnosis. And so I think it's just really making sure that your friends and family, wives, sisters, whoever gets diagnosed, just knows that you have their back.
It's always with you, but do you like sometimes going somewhere, going out? I mean, I'm used to going, every time I go out with you, we don't end up talking about cancer. We never.
Thank God.
Yes, thank God.
We just don't. But is that okay? I never think to give a nod to. And if I didn't know and nobody knew, they wouldn't have no clue that you're going through what you're going through. They would have no clue.
Yeah, I mean,
because of how you live, the energy you give. We talk about this all. You walk into a room sometimes and it's dark and you're wondering what's wrong with everybody. Sometimes you are the light that needs to come into the room. You are always the light. I have never been in a room where you aren't the light when you walk in. Never.
Thank you, TJ.
I'm serious.
That means a lot. It's just how you live and your output, because it's the only thing you can control. Mm. And TJ, you know, I'll never forget when you're such a gentleman and put me in a cab and made sure I found my Uber, like, and got home safe, for example. And I think just it's the kind things like that you can do for people that are going through things where it's almost like, you doing all right? Yeah. And you've done that. Yeah. And it opens the door for me to be like, you know what? I'm not. Or, you know what? I'm not, but I don't want to think about it tonight. So let's party, or let's have a good time. Let's, you know, get together with a group of friends and just be silly, because that's what life's all about. I think Amy had mentioned, you know, laughter really cures all, and it does.
To Yul's point, I messaged her earlier asking how you were doing. Her response, yes, let's f-ing go. That's what she, this was a couple hours ago.
That is her mantra. And it is one of those things where you can control how you respond. You can't control anything else. What's mm-hmm. the biggest lesson you have learned? Is there one that you can point to through all of this, with all of this? I mean, there is pain. There is fear. There is suffering. What have you learned that the rest of us maybe don't know?
There's so many lessons from it. I think for me, you can't take any day for granted. And I know a lot of people say that. It may be cliche, but we don't know what tomorrow holds. And I think that keeps me going, to have that smile on my face and to keep an optimistic, you know, demeanor about myself. And that's the biggest lesson that I think I could take from all of this. And also, you know, there's always going to be people that want to bring you down or hate on you. And for me, I have no time to think about them anymore.
And you have been, I'm going to cry, the biggest supporter with everything that happened last year. You were amazing. Like, you get it. Like, those are the ride or dies, and you are one of my ride or dies. And I know you didn't get to meet my good friend Olivia Hutcherson, but I know we talked about her all the time. And for those who don't know, she passed away just after Thanksgiving this past year after fighting so beautifully and living so beautifully for several years with stage 4. But when we think about how life is so unexpected. You don't know what tomorrow brings. I think cancer patients and cancer survivors and cancer thrivers just are a little bit more aware of how precious that time is. And you have spent it and you are spending it so well. And I am learning from you and through you how to live better each and every day. You're that special and you're that beautiful. And I love you.
Oh, I love you too, Rose. And get on that plane. If you're healthy enough to get on a plane and see the world, get on that plane.
Birthday is when? Yours is coming up. When?
Valentine's Day. You got some Aquarius girls in the house here.
What's the plan for the birthday?
I don't know.
Okay. What's the next trip?
Healing up. Next trip, we're going to Cabo in June.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier about your treatment every 3 weeks. But just sitting here right now, just physically, how do you feel? Just on a day-to-day, how do you feel physically?
Tired. Mm. I know it doesn't look like I'm tired, but you know, after a marathon, the next day.
Okay.
Where you have to walk downstairs backwards just to survive.
Okay.
Yes. Some days, my bad days feel like that. But the good days feel like that runner's high that you're just so fortunate enough to experience. And I'm grateful that I have marathoning to fall back on, because it's such a good, I think, analogy for what I have ahead of me.
Yeah. You still got a lot of marathons to run.
Yeah.
And we're grateful for you, Morgan. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, guys.
Want to let everybody know you can check out Amy and TJ on Instagram to weigh in. Say whatever you want. Comment away.
let's limit that little.
I really do hope that you listen to Morgan and you hear her story and you live better because of it.
And folks, get your mammograms. Fellas out there, women in your life, you need to remind them it's not just about women. This affects us all. So men, you are in this game as well. Remind them all, there is a 90% survival rate within 5 years for people who are diagnosed with breast cancer. So this is something, if it's caught early, if it's diagnosed, if it gets to treatment, this is something you can absolutely get past and deal with. And we need to remember that. And we know 1 in 8 women are diagnosed with breast cancer. But you know what? That means 7 out of 8 won't be. So everybody has to be in this to support the 1 in 8. And your words, something you said before we started, you said, I got slapped in the face with life. And that stuck with me. I wrote that down to the top of my page. But I love that you got slapped in the face with life. And when that happens to you, Morgan, you are the absolute, and I don't say this just because you're sitting here, I say this behind your back all the time. You are an anomaly. You are a joy like I have never seen. And if she had never told me you had metastatic breast cancer, you would just, that chick is awesome because of the way you are, period, point blank. So I will say it here publicly. I say it behind your back. I don't say it to your face enough. You are an absolute joy and an anomaly in life. And I'm so glad I got to meet you. I'm sorry that breast cancer brought us together. Breast cancer brought you two together. Yep. But you know, that's how life goes sometimes. But I just wanted to say that to you here. You are, and I love you too, girl. Oh,
thank you, guys.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.